kept you waiting, Alfie, but I really wanted that bath.
I've been telling you that for a week.
Don't be so cheeky.
That's enough of that, Jimmy. Sit down, Susan, I'll get you a cup of tea. Is Grandad ready yet?
Yes, he's coming down now, Mother.
Hey, what are you putting the light on for? It's still daylight.
Because I want to look at my face in the mirror.
There's bravery for you, Alfie.
Dry up. Oh, that bathroom mirror. My lipstick's all crooked.
Nah, it looks all right to me.
Of course your lipstick's all right. It's a face that's crooked.
The unmistakable voice of Jimmy Clitheroe, star of The Clitheroe Kid, one of the most popular radio sitcoms ever broadcast. My name is Brian Truman. Back in 1958, I joined the cast of The Clitheroe Kid, providing voices for different characters, including, when he came along later, Scouser Harry Whittle. It's 30 years since Jimmy Clitheroe died, only a few months after the last edition of The Clitheroe Kid was broadcast. He was 51, and he'd been playing a schoolboy since his teens. Jimmy was born with a thyroid condition that stopped him growing beyond 4'3". But despite, or perhaps because of his condition, he became a huge success in the entertainment world. His name was Clitheroe, and he was born in Clitheroe, North Lancashire, in 1921. Soon after that, the Clitheroe family moved to the neighbouring village of Blacko. But I went to Clitheroe to meet Irene Oxford, who's Jimmy's cousin, and asked her what she remembered of Jimmy as a child.
He was always mimicking. He was in all the school concerts. So the Blacko people will tell you, they all knew him. Because he was up to his tricks even at any old age.
Was he very small when he was
Yes, he was. And they didn't realise he was not going to grow until he was about, 13, 14, and he was still only the size that he remained to be. He didn't grow any bigger.
I used to play with Jimmy, cricket and football and that kind of thing. He could run in and out of them without a lot of trouble. I remember when Jimmy put the pads on, you could only just see his head above the pads. They covered him all up.
Tommy Trafford and chums from Jimmy's old school in Blacko.
And a lot of the bigger lads used to pick on him from time to time, but he always had an answer. If he couldn't use his weight or his fists, he used to nip them, and we used to call him the Little Nipper.
And he was quite a cheeky little chappy, you know. And we used to pick him up and throw him about, being a small child, you know. But his only way of getting away, he used to nip. He could nip really savage, you know, and he used to drop him, you know, that was his protection.
Oh, the top of the morning to yous, Da, say hello. Da. Da.
Yeah, I'm in there.
Top of the morning to you.
Morning? It's evening.
Oh, well, we go by the Irish time, don't we, Da?
Yoke, I mean, sure. Yes.
We always have the clock set for Ireland because it's morning there when it's night here, and that's why me Da goes out every morning on the night shift. Me jabers, me gorra.
One of Jimmy's first engagements was in Wyn Stanley's dancing troupe, where his musical and comedy talents soon came to the fore.
It was all girls and just Jim. Yeah, he loved it. He used to tell the tale of always pinching their hair grips and making them pay to get them back.
At the tender age of what, 15 or 16?
Thereabouts, yes, yeah. That's true. He played the xylophone, the piano accordion, and he played the clarinet a little bit.
This I never knew.
There you are, you see.
This was a side of Jimmy I never actually saw.
He did. Well, of course, once he went on to the pantomime scene, and he's just stuck to that all the time. But in his early days, he had a go at anything.
Quite enough frivolity. Now tell me, do you play in the school band as well?
Oh, yes, I play the bugle. You can always tell me when we march through the streets. I'm the one with the boots down the seat of me trousers.
Why's that?
Well, I march in front of the trombone player.
Oh, you are the witty one, aren't you?
I'm all there with me cough drops. Hey, what did the toothpaste say to the toothbrush?
I don't know.
Squeeze me and I'll meet you outside the tube.
That was a rare recording of Jimmy Clitheroe and Jack Watson performing in Variety in Blackpool. Variety would be Jimmy's first love, and from there he'd go on to make the break into radio. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Like most variety performers in the late 40s and early 50s, Jimmy had to make do with roles that were not ideal. But it did mean that he learned his trade from the great entertainers of that era, among them Frank Randall. Here's Irene Oxford again.
Frank Randall would come on stage on his own, a few words to the audience, and then he'd say, well, Ralph, I'll just get my old friend out here. And he'd go to a trunk and pick up Jimmy from the trunk, who was immediately made up to look like a dummy, and just hung there, you know, put him on his knee and did the act, you know, and it was so lifelike. I remember seeing this for the very first time. It impressed me. And, of course, when it's all over, Jim comes to life and jumps off his knee. And the audience were absolutely amazed because it was so lifelike otherwise.
Although it went well, I always found it rather grotesque. He looked too much like a dummy.
Writer and producer Jim Casey, who'd later give Jimmy Clitheroe his first radio role.
Being a midget with this set grin on his face, I mean, it was very good, very lifelike, but he looked really like a dummy, and it wasn't very nice, I didn't think, to look at.
Now, why don't you try and be a little bit more like George Washington?
Who's he?
You mean to say you've never heard of George Washington?
Is he a rock and roller?
He is not.
Oh, I've never heard of him then.
Well, he's a little boy who never told a lie.
Oh, no wonder I've never heard of him.
Now, one day...
What day was it?
Friday.
Which Friday was it?
The first Friday after Christmas.
Oh, good. Was it snowing?
If you like, it was snowing.
Coming down?
Of course it was coming down. Have you ever heard of it snowing up?
No, up in Scotland.
Oh, very funny. Now, one day...
Same day?
Yes.
First Friday after Christmas?
Yes.
Was it still snowing?
Yes, of course it was. And just stop asking these questions. Don't you know curiosity killed the cat?
Why, what did he want to know?
Jimmy Clitheroe and Bert Lyndon in Variety. Jimmy's childhood years, growing up in Lancashire in the 1930s and 40s, can't have been all that easy. A lad with a voice that never broke, teased by his schoolmates for his severely stunted growth, he must sometimes have wondered how he was ever going to survive and make his own way in the adult world. Coincidentally or not, he chose the one arena where his physical peculiarity became his strongest and perhaps at first his only selling point. Certainly it wasn't a world that anyone in his family were familiar with.
But was there any kind of showbiz history in the family?
No.
And what did they think of it when he decided that he would suddenly launch into this?
Well, there was little else he could do, really, when you think about it. I mean, to really do something he loved doing was great. I mean, he was in the right position to do something that he loved doing. And there was little else he could do when you think about it very seriously. Stage was just made for him, really.
In show business, of course, he wasn't a midget. He was Jimmy Clitheroe, who was a comic. And therefore, people would treat him as an ordinary man. And it was just as easy for them to say he was good or he was lousy without feeling any sort of guilt. Because outside, people would think of him possibly as look, there's a little man, a midget. But in show business, of course, he was Jimmy Clitheroe the comic.
Now, what sort of songs does he teach you?
Oh, daft, soppy ones. Before we broke up, he had us singing, oh, for the wings of a bee. For a whole hour, I thought if I got the wings of a bee, I'd buzz off.
Jimmy, some of those old songs are very nice. Now, what was it I used to sing when I was young? Oh, yes. I passed by your window when the morning was clear. I got a medal for that.
Well, if you passed by my window making that noise, you'd have got a bucket of water.
Tell me, do all the other kids hate singing old songs?
Oh, no, some of them love it, especially Spotty Barraclough.
Spotty Barraclough?
Yes, and he never thanked me when I helped him to win the competition.
Oh, and how did you help him?
Well, he was singing Cherry Ripe and he was worried that he wouldn't get the top note at the end. So I helped him with a tuning fork.
tuning fork? How?
I stuck the sharp end in his sitaphone.
The stage became Jimmy's natural home, where he was accepted by audiences and performers alike. Molly Sugden played Jimmy's mother on stage and later on television.
I never thought anything about it at all, and I certainly don't think he had any sort of chip on his shoulder. But that was a funny thing. On stage, he became a little boy. He was a little boy. I reacted to him as a little boy. In fact, one director once said to me, "I'm so afraid one day you'll smack him."
One did find oneself forgetting he wasn't a little boy. He was inclined occasionally to be a little mischievous. And whether he got sort of carried away with his character, I don't know. But I can remember one occasion we were rehearsing and there was a break. And behind the curtains were the orchestra's instruments, including the drums. And Jimmy goes there and he's banging away on the cymbal. And I wanted to start rehearsal again. And I sort of shouted, you know, "Come on, get off that drum and get here. Let's get some work done." And I suddenly thought, this isn't the little boy I'm talking to. This is the star of the show. But for a moment, it was a little boy who was being naughty.
A little boy who was being naughty. The character who would take the nation by storm was shaping up nicely and would serve Jimmy well for the rest of his professional life. Writer Jim Casey was about to launch Jimmy Clitheroe into the limelight, courtesy of a request from BBC Light Entertainment producer Ronnie Taylor.
I was given a series to take over for Norman Evans called Over the Garden Wall. And they'd done two shows and they weren't happy, and so he asked me to write it, which meant I had to use the characters and the people who were already booked. And one of them was a 12-year-old boy. And after the show, I said, "There's a fellow called Jimmy Clitheroe. He sounds younger than this lad and he'll get belly laughs." So he said, "Right, we'll book him." And after two shows, I said to Ronnie Taylor, "When can I do the Jimmy Clitheroe show?"
Unfortunately, it wasn't going to be quite so straightforward. Ronnie Taylor had expressed reservations about giving a midget, and that's a quote from the man himself, a starring role on radio, despite Jim Casey's very logical protest that audiences needn't be any the wiser. In the meantime, another radio series had come Jimmy Clitheroe's way. In Call Boy, Jim Casey saw a way of persuading the powers that be at the BBC that Jimmy Clitheroe was a sure winner. The man he had to convince was the London-based head of entertainment, George Camacho.
When we did the next Callboy series, which I produced, I changed it, and in the middle of this variety show, I put a 7-minute sketch with Jimmy Clitheroe at home with his mother, and the figures were marvellous, and the next time George Camacho came to visit Manchester, I met him as he came in, and I said, "Have you seen the figures for the Callboy?" He said, "Yes, marvellous." I said, "The best ever." He said, "Yes." I said, "The reason is Jimmy Clitheroe, at home, as a little boy, now can I do the Clitheroe kid?" And very reluctantly, he said, "Well, you can do 6. After 2, they extended the 6 to 10. And after it had finished, they repeated the whole 10 in the same spot. The following year, when he came up, and I said about the Clitheroe kid, he said, "Oh, yes, you can do another 6. And his assistant said, "Come on, George, you can't do that. Look what happened last time. We had 10 and we repeated them." So he said, "Oh, right, you can do 10. And not to coin the phrase, the rest was history, because we did nearly 300.
"Oh, I didn't know you were upstairs, Grandad.
"Oh, I'm just getting ready to go out."
"What is it tonight? Darts? Snooker? Our eyes down for a full house."
"What do you know about housey-housey?"
"We played at school in the history class."
"The history class? What's the history master doing teaching you housey-housey?"
"Oh, he's not there. You see, for the last month, every time we've had chemistry, Charlie Thompson makes a test tube full of sulfurated hydrogen, and just before the history class, he pours it over the radiator. It smells just like bad eggs."
"I know that."
"Well, when Fruit Salad Fred comes in..."
"Who?"
"Fruit Salad Fred, the history master. He's got a nose like a banana."
When he comes in, we complain of the smell coming up from the laboratory. So Fred goes down and has a row with the chemistry master. And by the time he gets back, we've had two games of housey-housey.
What a mob. Well, who started all this?
Oh, Ozzy. He's learned all the sayings from his dad. Legs 11, clickety-click, 66. Kelly's eye, number one. Two fat ladies, 88. Top of the shop, 90. Mugs return.
Mugs return? What's that?
Oh, it isn't a number. It's what the lookout shouts when the history master's coming back.
Looking back from our more sophisticated or perhaps more cynical perspective, it's hard to believe that people would accept the reality of a grown man, albeit a short one, acting the part of a 12-year-old boy. But believe it, they did. The Clitheroe Kid became a must-listen for millions of people every Sunday lunchtime. At the height of its popularity, a quarter of the entire population tuned in. And as Jim Casey recalls, sometimes the illusion of Jimmy as a boy was just too convincing.
Somehow, they suspended their belief and really thought of him as a boy. I mean, even in the canteen in the BBC, I remember getting cross with a woman serving who, when Jimmy said, "Oh, I don't want all that," she said, "Oh, go on, it'll make you grow." I was furious, but she obviously regarded him as a boy.
Whilst anybody who knew Jimmy never felt that he was a little person.
Molly Sugden.
I think when he walked about the streets, it couldn't be avoided. And people would come up to him. And, I mean, it's a bit of a smothering experience if people keep coming up and grabbing your arm and holding you around the waist and, "Oh, get off, you know, please, say hello, but don't keep pawing me."
Most of the time, Jimmy didn't seem to be disturbed by the attention, unless, that is, he was out in public with his mother, Emma. Irene Oxford.
The only thing that was a great shame, shall I say, really, was his mother. He always took his mother with him wherever he went. And his mother was very protective. And if anybody pointed him out in the street, she'd get cross, very cross. And say, "It doesn't need you pointing him out," and she'd go on and on and on. And in a way, she would embarrass him.
Yeah.
More often than not, she embarrassed him. And she didn't realise she was doing it, but Jim would absolutely curl up and try and get out of the way, you know, not to be his mum to go on like she did. But he couldn't stop her.
So she was more sensitive about his height
very
than he was
sensitive
himself?
Indeed. Yes, absolutely very sensitive. Yes, she was. And very protective. And it didn't do him any good, really. It was a shame. And you could talk to her and say, "Look, just don't worry about it. Let it go, you know, let it slide over." "No way, no, no, no."
It was around this time that Jimmy Clitheroe made his cousin Irene an offer she couldn't refuse.
He said, "If I buy the Mini Traveller, will you come and work as my private secretary and drive me around from shows to shows?" And I said, "Oh, great idea." So I gave up my teaching career and went onto the road, if you might say, with Jim.
And were you the catering manager, so to speak, as well?
Yes,
head
yes,
cook
yes.
And bottle washer.
Yes, yes, yes. Did all his mail and his correspondence and his any office work that needed to be done, as well as drive him around wherever he wanted to go. I was just at his beck and call, really. But I enjoyed it. It mixed me into a life I had not known about before and thoroughly enjoyed it.
"Just a minute, I know that voice. Let me see you. Yes, of course, it's our own Clitheroe Kid, Jimmy Clitheroe."
"Hello, Mr. Watson."
"Hello, Jimmy, and how are you enjoying your stay in Blackpool?"
"Oh, smashing. Me and Ozzy went on a mystery trip this morning. We were at the depot at 6 o'clock, helping to get the driver to get the bus ready."
"I bet the driver was pleased."
"He wasn't. He didn't get there till 8 o'clock, and it was 9 o'clock before he got the wheels back."
"What do you mean?"
"Some naughty boy had been round and let the tyres down." "Hey, there's a lot of air in them tyres, isn't there?"
"I beg your pardon?"
"There's a lot of air in them tyres."
"Jimmy, there's a lot of air in those tyres."
"That's what I said. He blew me cap off twice."
"But your driver
him tired.
Why was that?
He'd been blowing him up for an hour before we told him he was supposed to use a pump.
Jimmy's fame attracted thousands of fan letters, many of them from children. And not all of them approved of the Clitheroe kids' rascally behaviour on air.
One was a little girl who obviously disapproved strongly of the way he talked about his sister, Scraggy Neck and so on. And she wrote and said, "Jimmy Clitheroe is horrible and I hate him." And the other one was a boy who wrote and said, "Jimmy Clitheroe is the only real boy on radio." I got a letter from a nun who said she'd been with this old lady who wasn't well, and my play came on the radio, as she called it, and they were both laughing their heads off, and the woman felt wonderful. And she said, "Could you send me a copy of your play so we can do it in the convent?" So I sent them a script, and I thought, well, I wonder which one's playing Jimmy.
Yes?
Hello, Mr. Higginbottom.
Oh, it's you, is it? What do you want apart from causing trouble?
I want to see Ozzy, please, Mr. Higginbottom. Is he in?
No, he's not. He's gone for his trumpet lesson.
Oh, I thought he was packing up the trumpet after what his teacher said.
What do you mean, what his teacher said?
Well, he told Ozzy he made a better noise when he blew his nose.
We'll hear what noise you make when I clout your ear in a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Higginbottom. Well, that's what Ozzy told me.
Well, he's not in, so you can go home and annoy your grandfather. Hold tight, Wad.
Me granddad's not in either. He's gone to have his hair cut.
Oh, aye. I forgot. It's February.
Inevitably, television producers started expressing an interest in transferring the Clitheroe kid to the newly expanding arena of entertainment TV. But for a man then in his 40s, playing a schoolboy in his early teens, there was an obvious drawback to the idea. ITV offered Jimmy a part in a Clitheroe offshoot series. Jim Casey did not approve.
Now, he couldn't do the Clitheroe kid because I owned the copyright and I worked for the BBC, so they got as close as they could. But they made vital mistakes. Every week he had a different girlfriend. Now, that is ludicrous. Anybody could accept one girl falling for him, this fool. But there's no way he could become a ladies' man. And they didn't worry about the script being wrong for Jimmy. For instance, they put him in a long-trousered suit that was too long for him as a football mascot. Well, he just looked like a midget in a suit that was too big for him.
Television works in close-ups.
Geoffrey Wheeler was a BBC light entertainment producer who often worked with Jimmy Clitheroe.
An act like Jimmy Clitheroe is fine on the stage because everybody is at least 25 yards away from you, especially in the old days when you had footlights in the orchestra pit. So quite distant, so makeup and costume and so on. You could create the illusion. If you're standing so near to them that they're, you know, you can touch them, then it's difficult to maintain that illusion, and it is a little bit strange. And perhaps it isn't enormously wise, if you have that kind of an act, to do it in big close-up.
Moving to television wasn't the only professional misjudgment that Jimmy made. According to Jim Casey, the bottom line for Jimmy was always the financial gain to be made.
Money dominated his life, really. And in a way, it was his problem and it was a drawback in his career. I mean, I can remember him saying to me once, he had a pantomime. He said, "Oh, it's terrible, the script is terrible." And I thought, he probably wants me to rewrite the script. For nothing. I said, "Well, why are you doing it? You did a pantomime last year. It was very good. And you could have done the same pantomime this year somewhere else." Now, he didn't like the producer and he thought the script was terrible. But he was doing it because they were offering him £100 more.
The Clitheroe Kid ran for nearly 15 years on radio, coming to an end in 1972. In many ways, Jimmy Clitheroe's success on radio had changed his life immeasurably for the better. Rather than being known simply as a local Lancashire boy who never grew up, he was a respected and well-liked entertainer with a loyal band of fans. But in his personal life, he was lonely. He still shared a house with his mother and had never had a long-standing romantic relationship. His cousin Irene Oxford recalls that fame didn't change him much at all.
It never altered his way of life. He just lived it as he always had. He don't need to speak. If he needn't be in sight. But if they heard his voice, you know, and they were there. And he found that this happened wherever he went for many years afterwards. The Clitheroe kids certainly made him known nationwide. I mean, he was up to his boyish tricks, even off stage, you know. He was always pinching things off folk and hiding it, and just what little boys would do. I think he got into the role so much that he was just doing it naturally. He loved his life, he loved the stage. I mean, I don't think he could have survived. Well, he didn't he? I don't think he wanted to survive after stage career was over. Not really.
Jimmy Clitheroe died on the 6th of June, 1973, the day of his mother's funeral, of an accidental overdose of sleeping pills. Despite the sad end, Jimmy Clitheroe is surely best remembered for all those Sunday lunchtimes when families gathered around the radio to tune in to the everyday stories of a teenage boy and his strangely assorted kinsfolk. From me, Brian Truman, goodbye.
Well, no, that'll do for tonight, Noah. Will you go to your bed?
Oh, in a minute, Grandad.
Look, you've just had a bath and you're walking around with no slippers on, or your mother'll get mad.
Oh, I can't go to bed till I find Timothy, my white mouse.
What mouse?
I got it from Ozzy this morning. I swapped him for 3 Kali suckers.
You tell your mother.
Why, she doesn't like Kali suckers. Hey, look under your bed, Grandad, while I look under the wardrobe.
Father, what on earth are you doing, playing marbles?
No, I'm looking for a mouse.
A mouse?
Hey, there's a moose loose around this goose.
Well, never you mind that. You go downstairs and see if you can get a trap. You'd no right to get that mouse without asking me. You know that Susan's terrified of them.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am.
Well, hurry up now. Come on, let's see if we can find it.
Susan's found it. I've got him. You can come down now off that dressing table.
Fancy having a horrible thing like that for a pet.
Why not? You've got Billy.